Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Betsy Woodruff of National Review, and for Jim Garrity today, we've got good, bad, and crazy martinis for you. And Betsy, the good news is a story that you actually reported on for NationalReview.com, and that is a vote that I believe is happening today in Albuquerque, New Mexico, on a very hastily arranged ballot initiative. The folks there are going to be voting on whether to ban the vast majority of abortions once the unborn child reaches 20 weeks in utero. And that, of course, is generally established now as at the very latest, the time when the unborn can feel pain. And as your story indicates, there seems to be a very good likelihood that this will pass in a major city. And usually the cities are the places where folks are most resistant to this. Go ahead and fill folks in on what's going on in Albuquerque.
Yeah, it's a really fascinating situation. If Albuquerque passes this initiative, they'll be the first city in the United States to accomplish something along these lines. And it's important, especially in Albuquerque, because they have, you know, two of the very few clinics in the United States that still perform late-term abortions. So if they get rid of their clinics, and Texas has already gotten rid of abortions after 20 weeks, it's going to be extremely difficult for women to terminate pregnancies that are in the third trimester. So it's definitely a big win for pro-lifers if they manage to pull this off. One thing that's really fascinating about this to me, actually two things. The first is the organizers that I spoke with said that part of the reason they're optimistic about the outcome today is that they just had extraordinarily great success in getting signatures for the petition. They only needed a little more than 12,000, but they tell me they managed to collect 27,000 in the space of less than 3 weeks. And the other thing that's really fascinating about this is that they tell me 96% of the signatures that they got came from outside of church, you know, both Protestant and Catholic. The role of Christians and religious people in American life hasn't been reported on nearly as much since I think Obama became president. You know, when George W. Bush was president, we heard all the time about evangelicals, the ascension of the religious right, etc. But we haven't heard about that as much in the last few years. But one thing that's really interesting about this Albuquerque story is that it does highlight the continued political clout of churches and other religious communities. I think it's fair to say that without churches' involvement, or at least without the accessibility that churches give to people who often have conservative political convictions, there's basically a 0% chance that Albuquerque would be on the verge of banning late-term abortions.
And you mentioned the great success collecting signatures outside of churches. Talk about the demographics inside Albuquerque. I'm guessing there's a pretty extensive Hispanic population. If that's the case, a pretty extensive Catholic population, both of which tend to be heavily pro-life. So while most cities might not trend that way, Albuquerque seems to be a little different.
There is. Albuquerque definitely skews Catholic, definitely has a significantly higher Hispanic population compared to other major American cities, and Catholic organizations have played a pivotal role in pushing forward on this initiative. So it's really interesting because it kind of takes some demographics that, you know, typically you might not necessarily associate with conservative politics. You know, Hispanics, Roman Catholics are pretty divided in terms of their partisan leanings. But at least in the case of this initiative, see, that's going to have very strong support. That's what I expect to see. We'll find out either late tonight or early tomorrow.
And if it passes with a pretty healthy margin, do you expect this to catch fire in other cities, or is this kind of lightning in a bottle given what we just talked about in the makeup of the city?
You know, I think the odds of this happening in other cities are fairly slim, mostly because large cities tend to be dominated by Democrats, and also because most cities don't have ballot initiatives like this. I believe Albuquerque is one of only a few major American cities where you can actually pull off this kind of ballot initiative. That said, if this does pass, first, it's just extremely effective as far as limiting the ability for women to get late-term abortions. And second, it sends a message to the New Mexico state legislature. One thing that one of the organizers told me is that pro-life activists have been very frustrated with the fact that pro-life legislation just kind of goes to committee and then dies. But if Albuquerque voters manage to show that there is, you know, the will and the political muscle to really make this procedure something that essentially never happens or very rarely happens in New Mexico, there might be increased pressure on state legislators to actually move on a statewide ban that would be along the same line as Texas's.
Well, that's certainly good news on the life front, and just the added perk for any journalist to be able to type out Albuquerque. That's always fun. All the Q's and the U's in there. So good news all the way around, and great reporting on that, Betsy. On to the bad martini now, and we go to the Cheney family saga. This kind of broke over the weekend, but it's been simmering in the background for a while, ever since Liz Cheney went to Wyoming last year. This year filed a challenge, of course, to run against the sitting Republican U.S. Senator out there, Mike Enzi. Right now, according to the latest public opinion poll, she is about to get trounced, but obviously there's a lot of time between now and the primary, but she's down by about 50 points, and there's two big issues that seem to be working against her. Number one, that she may have moved out there just to run for office, and the other is that she's soft on defending traditional marriage, which she says she is not. Of course, her sister is a lesbian, got married in Washington, D.C., I believe, in the last couple of years. Her dad, the former vice president, is a supporter of same-sex marriage, and so the assumption has been that she is as well. She's given very vague answers in the past about this, but since she's run for Senate and these outside ads have come in suggesting that she's not a defender of traditional marriage, she has gone on the offensive to say that she is. And she said that again on Fox News Sunday, which started a social media battle between her and her sister Mary and Mary's partner Heather Poe. And all of this kind of blew up to the point where the vice president and his wife issued a statement on Monday suggesting that, you know, this shouldn't have never gotten this far in public. And Liz is very compassionate, but she holds this position and she should be respected for that. Betsy, I don't know about you. I think this is kind of a stage situation where Liz Cheney knows she needs to make up some ground in Wyoming. So what better way to prove to traditional conservatives you're on their side than to take on your own family in public? But it's still a pretty ugly fight.
It really is. I wonder how long it'll be till someone offers the Cheney family a reality show, keeping up with the Cheneys or something. It's wild. And I think one thing that you mentioned early, and I wonder if this is just as much of a factor, is the fact that people in the Mountain West are very suspicious of carpetbaggers. If you're not from the community, if you don't know the people, a lot of these big states, it's very difficult for anyone perceived as an East Coast outsider to get elected. But as far as just the situation of this family feud, I mean, geez Louise, you got to feel sorry for the Cheneys. You know, regardless of how you feel about Cheney's tenure as vice president, I don't think you could wish this kind of very public, very vitriolic family fight on your worst enemy. I guess this is the kind of thing that we should, you know, be increasingly braced for, given the importance and influence of social media on American political discourse. But it's just so excruciating to watch. And that is, I guess, the remarkable thing about Facebook and Twitter and Tumblr, is that it gives people, you know, like Heather Poe, like Liz Cheney, who aren't necessarily very prominent in the specific political stories that are going on, it gives them a platform, and I believe an important platform, to sound off through a very quick and easy and efficient medium. So I imagine this is the kind of thing that we'll see more of. And I also imagine that, you know, parents of politically inclined children nationwide are cringing, you know, bunkering down for the day when they have to watch their kids take their fights from, you know, the backseat of the car on the family vacation to Sunday morning TV shows.
Most of us won't get that opportunity, but we do have the access to social media. So, yeah, parents all over the place, if they understand social media, I can imagine how they'd be a little frustrated by folks airing their dirty laundry for the entire world to see. I can't imagine how that's a good thing in the long run. But it does, on some level, if handled well, improve the discourse. But if it's just an airing of grievances, we're just headed towards a massive national festivus. And I don't think that's a good news for anybody.
Yeah, the Cheneys are really giving a new meaning to the phrase, keep it in the family.
He's so good on message discipline. Nobody kept his mouth shut better than Dick Cheney. So to watch this happen in his family in particular is very, very odd.
I know. It's wild.
All right. On to the crazy martini. And usually our crazy martini is either something outrageous that's said by liberals or just flat out insane, like what's happening with the mayor of Toronto, who's been in the crazy martini at least once in the past. But this is a crazy martini that's so crazy it's actually good for conservatives. And that is some of the latest polling as a result of the horrific rollout of Obamacare and the president's handling of it. Michael Barone, writing for Real Clear Politics here, he also writes for the Washington Examiner, not only talking about how Obama's overall numbers are down, I think we're all aware of that, but if you look at his performance among millennials and Hispanics, he won Hispanics in the 2012 election 71-27. Now Hispanics disapprove of his performance 47-41. He won millennials in 2012 by a very wide margin, 60-37. They disapprove now, 54-36. So, Betsy, as our resident millennial, please interpret.
As the resident millennial, oh, that's a great title. I should put that in my Twitter bio. I always feel kind of goofy being the person, well, I'm 24, so I'm an expert on all 24-year-olds, but let me wear that hat. I think people in my demographic are both very eager to find someone who has the charisma and the sincerity and the compelling narrative that then-Senator Obama had in 2008, but I think they're proportionately jumpy to ditch people who they find uncompelling or insincere or trying to pull a fast one on them. You look at the kind of media people my age consume. You look at Vice Magazine, Gawker. There's a huge appetite for this very sarcastic, biting, sort of a desire to take people down. You know, I think millennials are very interested in iconoclasm. And to see the president just kind of start crumbling, you know, very publicly, especially in the press conference last week. It's the kind of thing that I think millennials sort of enjoy. I think they kind of like seeing their idols become taken down. I think we like watching public meltdowns. I mean, we love reality TV. And what's a better example of the kind of implosion than seeing a president whose administration can't make a website? It's all just so absurd and kind of theatrical that it really doesn't surprise me that young people are quickly being disabused of their confidence in the president's ability to govern effectively.
A little bit of a sobering follow-up. Just because they're not enamored with the president right now doesn't mean that Republicans can necessarily expect a massive shift in subsequent elections, though, correct?
No. Absolutely not.
Pouring cold water on that just a little bit, but at least they're paying attention, and that's always a good sign, especially with something as horrific as what's going on with the Obamacare rollout. So, Betsy, as always, great to have you with us. Thanks for filling in today.
Thanks a bunch.
Betsy Woodruff of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please tune in on Wednesday for the next edition of the 3 Martini Lunch. Have a great day, everyone. Yeah.